How many of you can relate to the scripture reading we just read? Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 16 says, "For a righteous man may fall seven times." How many of you think you have fallen at least seven times? But it doesn't stop there, does it? It says, "And will rise again." There's a powerful quote by Thomas Edison. It says, "Many of life's failures are people who did not realize how close they were to success when they gave up." There's a story that sticks in my mind of a man of persistence and determination. And it was a young man by the name of Abraham Lincoln. Some of you may know him as the 16th president of the United States. Many of us think of the success of Abraham Lincoln, but we don't realize what it took for him to be able to get there. At the young age when Abraham was being raised, he was raised in a home of poverty and forced out of the home and required to work in order to be able to provide for the family. He lost his mother at a very young age. And at the age of 21, he failed in business for the first time. He ran for the state legislature at the age of 22 and he lost. He also lost his job and he wanted to go to law school, but he couldn't get in. He borrowed some money from a friend to begin a business, and by the end of that year, he was bankrupt. He spent the next 17 years of his life paying off this debt. Now, after that, he ran for the state legislature again, and he won. He was engaged to be married, but his sweetheart died when he was 26 years old, before they were ever married. He sought to become the speaker of the state legislature, but he was defeated. He sought to become the elector, but he was defeated. He ran for Congress, and he lost. He ran for Congress again, and this time he won and went to Washington and did a great job. He ran for the re-election of Congress, and he lost. Continues on, he sought for a job as a land officer in his home state, and he was rejected. He ran for senator of the United States, and he lost. He sought the vice president nomination of his party in the national convention and got less than 100 votes. He ran for the U.S. Senate again, and he lost, and he was elected president of the United States. Now, we realize that success never comes without a struggle. Would you agree? Many inventors have said that if they wouldn't have persisted through difficulty, they would have never found success. I was reminded of this as I was studying the books of Judges and 1 Samuel this week and looking through the story of the children of Israel. And the children of Israel's story relates very directly to that of anyone who's ever gained success. For those of you who have read it before, sometimes it can be depressing because it looks like there's just continual defeats one after another, and you wonder, how will God ever give them victory? Let me give you a few examples. In the time of Judges chapter 13, Israel became captive to the Philistines. For over 40 years, they were captive. In Judges chapter 14, they were finally victorious, and they were able to win victory, and Samson delivered the children of Israel at his death. 1 Samuel chapter 4 tells us once again the children of Israel were defeated. 1 Samuel chapter 7 tells us that they gained the victory over the Philistines. 1 Samuel chapter 13 tells us that they were defeated. 1 Samuel 14 tells us that there was a partial victory. 1 Samuel chapter 14 tells us that there was a continual war for all the years of the kingship of Saul. Now, I want to ask you a question. How many of you often feel like your Christian life looks a lot like Abraham Lincoln's professional life or like the life of the children of Israel? You sense that the Lord's calling you to do something, or you're looking for victory over a certain sin or struggle or complication in your life, but it never seems like you can get a handle on it. Can anyone relate to this issue? And we realize that time and time again we persist through this, and the Bible tells us that a righteous man will fall seven times, but there's another key that comes, and what is it? You don't just fall, but you get back up. I would say the greatest reason for failure in the Christian life is not because we didn't try, but it's because we didn't try again. This morning we're going to be looking at a very familiar story after these years and generations have gone by in the history of the Israelites. Failure after failure after failure. through one of the darkest periods of Israel's history, after Moses had died and after Joshua had died and the conquest was over, and now they're in captivity to the very people who God had promised the land to. And as they're there in captivity, God desires to deliver them. Now, this morning we're going to be studying the story found in 1 Samuel chapter 17, and I'm hesitant to tell you what story it is because I'm afraid when I do, you're going to check out. One of the greatest hindrances to our learning is familiarity. Would you agree? That's why when the pastor tells you to open to John chapter 3, verse 16, you sit there and just stare and make eye contact because we know it, right? And this morning we're going to be looking at a very familiar story. And what's the story? 1 Samuel chapter 17, the story of David and Goliath. Now, how many of you can raise your hand and say you could probably quote me the timeline of this whole story? Now, I see some hands. There's some humble people. But this morning, I believe the Lord is going to show us how it is that God was able to give his people success in their Christian life. You see, for years they had been defeated by the enemy, but now in this chapter, it's the turning point for the whole nation of Israel. Maybe there's many of you here who feel like you've just been in one constant defeat after another, and you never feel like you have victory in Jesus. But I believe that by God's grace, we can find the principles that gave David success in overcoming the enemy of his time that will give us success in overcoming the enemy in our time. Would you agree with that? This morning, we're going to be starting by reading 1 Samuel chapter 17, beginning in verse 1. Now the Philistines gathered their armies together to battle and were gathered at Succoth, which belongs to Judah. They encamped between Succoth and Azarah and Ephraim of Dimenah. Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up the battle array against the Philistines. And the Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. Now, was this an unfamiliar situation for Israel? No. For well over the last 100 years, they had been constantly confronted with the Philistines, constantly taken and as captives to their nation, paying tribute to their kings. And so once again, after being defeated for over 100 years, many generations, Israel once again is confronted with their problems. Do you guys feel like you have any problems like that in your life? The persistent ones that just don't seem to be able to allow you to have the victory that Jesus desires? Well, as they're there, was it God's desire for them to be defeated by the Philistines? No. God desired to give them victory, right? And this desire goes all the way back to the time of Abraham when he promised that God would create a nation, his own peculiar people, and he would give them a land to dwell in, and it was going to be the promised land where the Philistines dwelt. But because of unfaithfulness to God, Israel never received the promise. But now, in confrontation with the enemy, God once again desires to be able to give him what he's always longed for them to have. Now, we realize that this situation with the Philistines is not one that's very common or not something that we had seen happen before in their confrontation, but notice what's different. Look with me in verse 4. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had a bronze armor on his legs and bronze javelins between his shoulders. And now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels. And the shield bearer went before him. And then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you, the servants of Saul, choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me." Now, I don't know about you. We might think that we've heard the story of David and Goliath so much that it's almost diminished how scary this situation would have been. But the Bible tells us that this man was 6 cubits and a span. Now, in modern measurements, that's about 9.5 feet tall. And to give you an estimate of that, imagine going into the gym and looking at the basketball hoop that sits at 10 feet. And this man was just 6 inches shorter than that. And as this man is towering there, he was large enough that his armor weighed 125 pounds, just what he was wearing on his chest. His spear, just the head of it, was 15 pounds. Now, to give you a little idea of how heavy that is, that's about the same weight as a car tire. Now, here's a man, a giant of a man, standing in his massive form, once again threatening Israel. And what is their response? Notice the preceding verses. It says in verse 9, Saul continues to taunt them and defies the armies and tells them that if he defeats them, they'll be his slaves. But notice the reaction of God's people during this time. Verse 16 tells us that that the Philistine drew near and presented himself for 40 days, morning and evening. Didn't just happen once. Constantly confronted with the problem, larger than anything they'd ever dealt with before, consistently for a month and 2 weeks almost. And after that time, the children of Israel, as we see when David approaches, they're running and hiding in fear of what's getting ready to take place. Now, how many of you think that you're facing a problem in life that is just as sizable as this one? Now, some of us may not raise our hands, and we can't compare one problem to another, right? All situations are difficult, regardless of what we're going through. But it would be very hard for us to say that we're facing something even harder than this, right? I mean, what's more difficult than facing a giant who's almost 10 feet tall and ready to just take your head off? But we realize that God was able to provide victory in this situation, and if he could provide it in that situation, do you think he can provide it in your situation? Well, notice now, as David enters the scenes, we're going to find a few principles that give us the idea of how we too can have success in the Christian life. Notice with me as it continues. 1 Samuel chapter 17. Some of David's brothers were at battle, and verse 17 says, "Then Jesse said to his son David, 'Take now for your brother an ephod of dried grain and 10 loaves, and run to your brothers at the camp, and carry these 10 cheeses to the captain over their 1,000, and see how your brothers fare, and bring back news of them.' Now Saul and them and all the men of Israel were in the valley of Elah fighting with the Philistines. So David rose early in the morning, left the sheep with the keeper, and took the things." Now he continues on, and notice with me in verse 22, "And David left his supplies in the hands of the supply keeper and ran to the army and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked to them, there was a champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words, defying the God of Israel. And so David heard them." Verse 24. "And all the men of Israel, when they saw the men, fled from him and were dreadfully" what? Afraid. Did this seem like a small matter to God's people? Day after day, 40 days, this man would come out. And what was the response of God's people? They would flee in terror of what was facing them. But what was David's response to this situation? Notice verse 25. "So the men of Israel said, 'Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel, and it shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel.' What does David say? Verse 26. "Then David spoke to the men who stood by him, saying, 'What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine who should defy the armies of the living God?'" Now, does this sound different than the response of all of the rest of Israel? Israel hears of the difficulty that's coming to them and they run and hide. David sees what's taking place. And notice the very first thing is David doesn't say, "Look at this Philistine who is embarrassing us," right?
But what does David say? He says, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of what? Of the living God.
You see, David had one object in mind. David's one goal was to serve and to live a life that honored God. And if God told him to do something, David was willing to do it.
You see, one of the first characteristics that gives David success is that he was not concerned about himself.
He wasn't concerned about his own reputation. He wasn't concerned about how easy a job looked. But David was concerned that God's will would be carried out through his people. Now, this is something that oftentimes is misplaced. What if we too, like David, were more concerned about giving God glory than giving glory to ourselves? It reminds me of a story of missionaries who in 1956, five male missionaries, they left their families at home and they went to the remote jungles to reach an unreached tribe. Their one goal was the honor of the Lord, nothing to do with their own reputation. And as they get to the unreached tribe, they start to try to communicate with these people. And before long, the people become spooked and they become terrified that these people might be out to harm them. And the tribe ends up killing all five missionaries. Now, that would be bad enough if the story ended there. But because the family, not just the husbands of those homes, were more concerned about the glory of God than their own safety, the wives and the children got on a plane and flew to the exact same tribe that had just murdered their husbands. After laboring with them for a time, it's reported that by God's grace, many of them gave their lives to Jesus. And I wonder if we too, like David, had more of a desire for God's glory to be first and foremost in our lives, if we would see God do more amazing things than what we're seeing today. I think oftentimes we're too concerned about our own priorities and our own reputation. But remember what Paul says in Galatians chapter 2, verse 20. He says, I have been crucified with Christ, right? It is no longer I that live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life that I now live, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. You realize why Paul and many of the early apostles were able to be faithful missionaries was because they were more concerned about the reputation of Jesus than their own. They weren't concerned about losing their own lives because they'd already lost it. They said, I'm crucified with Christ. In other words, my life is his, and whatever he chooses to do with it, his will be done. And you see, this is the approach that David took. When he started to look at the situation with Goliath, he wasn't consulting himself on what would be the easiest. But no, he looked to what would bring God the glory. Now don't worry, we'll get to some points that are a little more practical. And you might think that that's a little too ethereal and too theoretical and not have any application in your lives. But I can guarantee that if each one of us had Christ as the center of our priorities, that there would be nothing that would be able to hinder God's people. Now, notice the story continues. 1 Samuel chapter 17 and continuing on in verse 26, we realize that first David was more concerned about the glory of God than his own reputation, but notice this next situation. After David hears this Philistine talk and he hears what's taking place, verse 26 tells us, then David spoke to the men who stand by them, and we've read this already. What shall be done for this man who kills the Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this uncircumcised Philistine who will defy the armies of the living God? Verse 27, and the people answered him in the same manner, saying, so it will be done for the man who kills him. Now notice verse 28. David has a desire to serve the Lord and desire to do the Lord's will, but what happens in verse 28? Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and Eliab's anger was aroused against David, and he said, why did you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and the insolence of your heart, for you have come down to see the battle.
Verse 29, and David says, what have I done now? Is there not a cause? Then he turned from him towards another and said the same thing, and these people answered him as the first.
Now, I don't know if we realize what just took place, but David seems to be the only one out of all the armies of Israel who has an issue with what's happening. And as David sees that God is being dishonored by this man coming and mocking him day after day, David says, what is it going to take for this to stop? And when David has the desire to do the Lord's will, what do you think Satan tries to do? Discourage him. Have any of you ever experienced that before? You sense the Lord calling you to do something, and it seems like discouragement comes before you even take the first step. And not only does it come from just without, but who does it come from? His own family. Now we realize that David's brother chews him out and kind of mocks him. You know, who have you left those few sheep with? You know, you're just kind of a worthless person. Why don't you just go back and take care of those? But does that stop David from continuing on with what he senses the Lord is calling him to do? No. What did we just read? It says, then he turned and said the exact same thing to other people. In other words, his brother rebukes him for what he says, and so he realizes the Lord's still calling him to do it, so he turns to someone else. Now, notice what continues on. Verse 31. Now, when these words which David spoke were heard, they reported them to Saul. Now, there was enough of a commotion that the king needed to be alerted of what was taking place. And he sent for him. Then David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant will go and fight with the Philistine. Verse 33. And Saul said to David, you are not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for you are a youth, and he is a man of war from his youth. Now, what's just happened in these last few verses? David has a desire to serve the Lord. His own family rebukes him for it and tries to discourage him. He turns to other people. It doesn't seem like they gave him much encouragement either. He finally goes to the king, and the king tells him, you know, why are you wasting your time? You realize you can't do this. You're too young. This guy's been fighting since he was your age. And you want to go and try to overcome this guy. Now we notice that one of the characteristics that enabled David to be able to be faithful and to win the victory in this conflict was not only that he had a desire for the honor of God, but number two, that he wasn't easily discouraged. You know, there's many people throughout history who, if they would have given up because of what other people told them, they would have never amounted to anything. There's a man that some of you may know by the name of Michael Jordan. I don't know if you've heard of him before. He used to be famous, and he might still be today. But Michael Jordan was actually cut from his high school basketball team because he wasn't good enough. When someone asked Michael Jordan about how he became one of the world's best players, this is what he says. He says, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I have lost almost 300 games. On 26 occasions, I have been entrusted to take the game-winning shot, and I missed. I have failed over and over again in my life, and that is why I succeed. Another man, a young man, was playing music, trying to learn the violin, and his teacher thought that there was no use in spending his time in teaching this young child violin when he seemed so awkward and useless in the occupation. So his teacher cut him from all lessons, even though this man was desiring to be a composer and a musician. But he didn't allow this failure to hold him back. He comprised many songs, five of them while he was completely deaf, and his name is Mozart. What would happen if these people had given up? You look at Jesus, John chapter 6. Jesus preaches one of his most powerful messages, and at the end of this message, it says that many people turned back from him and followed him no longer. And it was so bad that Jesus even turned to his own disciples and said, you know, are you going to leave as well? Because everyone who he had thought was the success of his ministry was now leaving. What would have happened if Jesus would have given up? We realize the reason why David was faithful in his conquest with Goliath is not because he was something good in and of himself, but it was because the honor of God and the will of God and the desire to do what God wanted him to do was the first and foremost thing in his life. And as a result of that, he was willing to be persistent, not presumptuous, thinking he was carrying out something on his own will, but when he realized that the Lord was calling him to do it, he was willing to do whatever it takes in order to see it accomplished. I think of a young man who was preaching an evangelistic series in Africa, and he came forward and decided to give his life to Jesus. And at the end of the meeting, after a few days, one of the elders came up to me and said, "Do you know what's happening to that young boy?" I said, "No, I don't know what's happening." He says, "Every time he goes home, his father beats him. And his father tells him, if you won't give up surrendering your life to Jesus, if you won't recant your idea of being baptized, I'm going to continue to beat you and disown you from this family." For 3 days that had taken place, and nothing shattered that young man's decision to give his life to Jesus. What if we had more Christians who were persistent and faithful? Satan's going to send every objection he can. Maybe it's your family members to discourage you. I can think of different times where I wanted the Lord to change my life, and I realized how cruel and upset I was, and people would say, "Why are you even trying? You're such a da-da-da-da-da." And they just discourage you to go back to the beginning. Or trying to overcome an addiction. Well, why do you even try to overcome that? You know you can't do it. You've tried so many times before, you're just going to fail again. But what if we had the attitude of David, where we were persistent in difficulty, not because we thought we were good, but because we saw the goodness of the Lord to be able to solve the problem? Now, David continues on. Saul finally agrees to let this young man fight. And that must have been an act of faith for Saul. What would have happened if David would have lost? What was the stake? We realize that the whole nation of Israel would have become slaves to the nation of the Philistines. But as David goes out, Saul tries to offer him his armor. And what does David do? Does David take the armor of Saul? No, he refuses it. And says that he's going to go out in what he knows that he's already fought in before. But notice what David says as he goes out to meet Goliath. Now, can you imagine this scene? Just imagine you're in David's spot, and you're going out to meet the guy who's as tall as a basketball hoop and probably as wide as a semi-truck. And as you're going to meet him, you're wondering, how in the world is this going to happen? Notice verse 34. Well, why don't we wait on verse 34? As he's going out, verse 40 says, "Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for him 5 smooth stones from the brook. And he put them in a shepherd's bag in a pouch which he had, and his sling was in his hand. And he drew near to the Philistine. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went before him. And when the Philistine looked and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good-looking. So the Philistine said to David, 'Am I a dog that you come to me with sticks?' And the Philistine cursed David by his gods, and the Philistine said to David, 'Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and to the beasts of the field.'" Now, can you feel what that must have been like? I'm sure David could almost get the wind off of this guy's breath as he's speaking so vehemently. But what does David say? Verse 45. "Then David said to the Philistine," you're right, I'm really in over my head. Is that what he says? "You come to me with a sword and with a spear and with a javelin. But I come to you in what? The name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. And this day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcasses of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the field, that all the earth may know that there is a God
in Israel.
Now this is something. David faces the largest enemy that Israel has ever faced. He's a young man with a leather strap that he uses as a sling and 5 stones in his pocket, and he's threatening the man who's standing there with 125 pounds of armor, a spear that's as heavy as a car tire, a man who's standing in front of him with a shield. It's like the armed forces are right there, and he looks him in the eye, and he says, nothing less than God is going to give me into your hands, you into my hands. You see, David never once questions success. Do you see that through the story of David and Goliath? You never see David wondering if God would deliver. When God says it, David believes it, and that was good enough for him. You guys familiar with that old Christian saying? The Bible says it, I believe it, and that's good enough for me. What if we were to take the Bible as it reads, and like David, knowing what the will of God was, instead of questioning about the success of our endeavors or the success of overcoming the different difficulties or problem of sin in our lives, we saw the promises of God instead of the problems of our situation? What would happen if we, like David, focused on the solution instead of the problem? When we were able to see God, who is the all-faithful, mighty God of Israel, who has never lost a war, and then we could have the true vision, like David, and see that there is absolutely no way to be defeated. What if we had a life of faith that focused on the power of God instead of the problems and our circumstances? One of my favorite quotes is found in manuscript release number 60, paragraph 22. It says, we must plan wisely and push forward the work, and let not outward appearances cloud our faith. Talk and act as though your faith was invincible. Faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. You see, what we see demonstrated in the life of David in the conflict with Goliath really should be nothing out of the ordinary for any Christian. What David demonstrated there was only simple faith that was rooted in the promises of Jesus, and he had confidence that God was able to bring the things to pass which he had promised. Do you think our lives would be a little different today? Do you think my life would be a little bit different today? If we could take God at His word and humbly cling to the promises of Jesus, not because of our own goodness or our own might and strength, but because of the faithfulness of the Lord. One of my other favorite quotes, Christ Object Lessons, page 363, says, but when we give ourselves wholly to God and in our work follow His directions, He makes Himself responsible for its accomplishments. He would not have us to conjecture as to the success of our honest endeavors. Not once should we even think of failure. We are to cooperate with one who knows no failure. You see, many of us are in situations very similar to that of David in facing Goliath. We might feel like there's no way that we can overcome the obstacles that are in front of us. Maybe it's financial difficulties in your family. Maybe it doesn't seem like the Lord's providing. Maybe you feel spiritually malnourished and you just don't ever think you're going to have a revival experience. Maybe it's struggling with an addiction or a sin that you just feel like God has never given you victory over. Maybe you just don't think there's any way you could ever be successful in working for God, because who are you to do anything? But we can find in the story of David the principles that would give us success. The question we all need to ask ourselves is, what are we more concerned about? Are we concerned about failure because of our reputation and that's why we don't try things? Are we afraid to start quitting something because we're afraid we'll just go back to it? Are we afraid to step out in faith because we don't know if God will actually be faithful in carrying through? What if we, like David, had a confident trust that whatever God said, he knew that it would be accomplished? What if as we move forward, instead of being discouraged by our surroundings and our circumstances, maybe even our own family members or those sitting in the pew next to us, what if instead of being discouraged, we took faith in Jesus? What would happen if not only that would take place, but we wouldn't even speak of failure because we knew that God was faithful? One of my favorite promises in Scripture is found in 1 John chapter 5. And this is a promise you can hang on to no matter what you're going through. 1 John chapter 5, verse 14. 1 John is filled with the promises that Jesus has in our Christian life and what he desires to do in us. 1 John chapter 5, verse 14 says, "Now this is the confidence that we have in him, that if we ask anything," what? "According to his will, he hears us. And if we know that he hears us whatsoever we ask, we know that we have the petitions that we have desired of him." Could it be any clearer? Could God give us any more hope? Sometimes we often despair because it seems like there's no way that we can get through X, Y, or Z or the different complications that we struggle with. But God says that he promises that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 13 also promises that I can do all things through who? Through Christ who strengthens me. As we go into the holiday season, as has been mentioned last week, it's a time sometimes where we are often discouraged more than encouraged because of circumstances or whatever might be taking place. Maybe you're happy and not feeling any difficulty, but we all know that sometime in life there are struggles. And the Bible promises that God is faithful, that he will accomplish what he's told us he would. How many of you this morning say, "Lord, I want to have a deeper experience with you. I want to have this faith like David." Now, I'm not preaching this sermon to you because I think I have the faith like David. I'm preaching the sermon because I need it all week to dwell on it. But I realize that if we had this experience with God, that this church would be a true light in this community. That God would do even greater things than we've ever seen before. God would work in my own life personally. Those struggles and those sins that so easily beset us, as Hebrews 12 talks about, would be able to be laid aside because of the power of Jesus in my life. And how many of you say, "Lord, I want that experience. I want to trust God so much that I'm able to be able to go through difficulties with confidence in him." Is that your desire this morning? This morning, as we sing our closing song, I want to invite you to stand, number 625, Higher Ground. We're all looking for a deeper experience with God in our Christian walk, and we need to walk to higher ground.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.